Thank you all so much for joining us today on our second L4GA podcast. I'm Megan Welch, the program specialist for the L4GA grant. And also with us is Dr. Roberta Gardner, assistant professor of literacy at Kennesaw State University. Today, we have a distinguished scholar with us. Dr. Susan Newman is a specialist in early literacy development. Her research and teaching interests include early childhood policy, curriculum, and early reading instruction for children who live in poverty. In her roles as the U.S. Assistant Secretary for Elementary and Secondary Education, Dr. Newman established the Early Reading First Program, developed the Early Childhood Educator Professional Development Program, and was responsible for all activities in Title I of the Elementary and Secondary Act. She has written more than 100 articles and authored and edited 11 books. Welcome. We are so honored that you are joining us today.
Oh, well, thank you. That's a lovely introduction, too.
Indeed. Dr. Newman, thank you for joining us. I want to ask you, you have a significant body of work, and I want to talk particularly about how your work on book deserts may have led you to this non-traditional space of laundromats and building literacy-rich environments in laundromat settings.
Well, it does seem counterintuitive, doesn't it, that we would focus on literacy in the laundromats. But much of my work has really been focused on the access to print and access to books in particular. And in many high-poverty communities, there are very few areas where children and parents can find books that are appropriate for those children. And so one of the things we began to realize is that there are wonderful libraries and wonderful librarians, but there are other non-traditional spaces where children spend a great deal of time. And in many, many of our communities, children spend about 2 hours a week with their parents in the laundromat.
Wow.
And so it becomes a real conducive environment to do something.
Right.
And to provide materials for children.
Very much so. So I know that the family read and play spaces have been sort of the model that you used. Can you describe what those are and talk a little bit about that particular setup?
Sure. And one of the things that we're trying to do is say it can be simple. So the setup is to take an area in the laundromat and to create a literacy-related play space, a play space that is designed for children to come and draw, sing, read, write, and play, and to do it on their own with other children. And one of the things, if you go into one of these laundromats, you'll see a little couch, which is appropriate for children to sit in, and as well as their parents. You'll find an open-faced bookshelf, sometimes a washer and dryer, toy washer and dryer, puppets, magnets and whiteboards, and paper and crayons and markers. And you'll often find a little rug, alphabet rug, that really focuses and basically says, this is the children's space. And we find that the children just, like magnets, they come into the laundromat and they know it's their space.
Well, that makes a lot of sense to me in terms of how you were talking about accessibility, because I think sometimes non-educators, non-formal educators, feel that educational spaces are how you effectively or correctly instruct is inaccessible. So making it more accessible in terms of, no, you just need really simple things, I think is really important.
Right. And one of the things that we find, which is so important, is that children begin to connect with others in their community. It creates a community space where children of different ages will be playing together, siblings will be playing together, and there's a good deal of talk, child-to-child talk, and we know this is related to literacy and literacy improvement.
Yeah, and so you have conducted two phases of research already related to the family read and play spaces, right? Is that correct?
Right.
Yeah, so can you discuss some of those findings?
Well, this was really interesting. It was designed as a pilot study, and there were three treatment laundromats, those with these little play spaces I've just described, and then three
that
were without.
Right? Okay, yeah.
Right. And there were three without those literacy-related play spaces in the same community. So there was a treatment in Brooklyn, and there was a control in Brooklyn. So we wanted to see, similar cultural communities as well. Mm-hmm. And what we found is in the first phase, we just simply changed the space. In other words, we put in this space with these very simple additions, and we watched as children played in those spaces. And we found that there was over 130 events, literacy-related events. And what we mean by that is the child would come in, open a book, start reading, play with the magnetic letters, and they would often go from one activity to another. Mm-hmm. And on the whole, what we found is the children would spend a good deal of time playing with other children, and it was about 6 minutes of time from each event. In other words, they wouldn't stay just reading for very long. They would go from reading to block playing to writing and things like that. Mm-hmm. So we found that really promoted literacy activity, which is very important. It basically says if you build them, they will come.
Right.
Just by being there. Mm-hmm. You don't have to instruct.
Right.
You don't have to say, go in there. They're just going to do it. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little curious about the types of books. Did you use any culturally relevant texts or any texts that were related to that laundry environment or anything like that?
No.
How were the texts?
And the reason we didn't, we would have liked to, mm-hmm. but the reason we didn't is, frankly, they were donated. They were provided by Scholastic Books, and they were from their book club. And many of those books are more or less what I call generic kinds of books, books about animals, books about colors, shapes, lovely little books, mm-hmm. but not tied to the cultural community, which would have been just ideal. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that really was very interesting in this particular phase is that the children began to write about those books and write about their experiences. Mm-hmm. And in some laundromats, they actually hung them up.
Nice.
So it became almost like a bulletin board in what you'd see in the classroom with all the children's work and writing from that community. And that began to say that we're building a literacy culture, a culture that is sensitive to children's emergent literacy and mm-hmm. prizes that by having it displayed. Mm-hmm. So then in the second phase, what we did is librarians came in once a week, sometimes twice a week, to that play space. And we saw the play space became somewhat transformed. What happened is the librarian began almost like a mini classroom in some ways,
sure.
Where she would read to the children, she would do play with the children, and there'd be common themes in some of the play of scarf play and writing and exploration.
Would they have known this librarian, or is it just?
No, they did not.
Okay.
They did not. This was just from the local library. So, for example, if it was in Queens, New York, it was someone from Queens Public Library. But very often, the children had never met the librarian before. So this was a new person. And to your point, some parents in the very beginning were hesitant to have their child go into the center now that there was an adult there because, oh, my gosh, we don't know that person.
Right.
But very soon, what they would see is their child was just enthralled. Mm-hmm. I mean, enthralled by this librarian who is paying so much eye-to-eye attention to the child. And now the average stay in that literacy relay play center was 41 minutes.
Librarian facilitator. How often did the librarian come in to facilitate?
She came in once or twice a week. Okay. It was different in different places. For Bronx, it was like once a week. In Queens, it was twice a week. We could, but what we did is we measured, you know, how much time the average each child actually came in, stayed, what they did during that time.
Mm-hmm. How long did you actually conduct the pilot?
For 12 weeks.
Okay.
It was a 12-week pilot.
Okay. I noticed also that you used photoethnography to capture some of the visual aspects of the program. And I'm
right.
wondering.
Right, we love that.
Yeah, that really did. I think that's useful for people who want to replicate what you did. Can you also talk
right.
a little bit about some of the other aspects of your methods and methodology for collecting the data?
Sure. One of the most effective strategies is this photoethnography. And what we basically do is we wanted to show in this particular case, so we do our research in phases or waves. We call it waves. And that means we'll create a protocol. For 2 weeks, we'll be focused on one particular aspect of the setting. We might be super interested in what the child is doing and how many different activities they're doing. But in the next protocol, what we'll often do is focus on the parent and what the parent is doing. And we used our photoethnography to focus on the parent activity. What we noticed is that parents often observed but rarely engaged. So you would look at the parent, and we would take a picture of the parent being very proud that that child was interacting with the librarian and delighted that they had such a pleasant interaction. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, she would not come into the area and actually play with her child. Mm-hmm. She would not do that very often. Mm-hmm. And so the photos actually display that very carefully. They show that our parents are learning by observation, but many of our parents do not feel confident enough to actually work with their child, with that adult. In other words, the adult was modeling and demonstrating a lot of literacy activities, but while that parent might take it up at home, they did not take it up in the literacy area itself.
And
that's powerful data, because I know that I can see where a parent might be intimidated with, like I was talking about before, you know, a professional educator, and it kind of being vulnerable to how you interact with your own child around literacy when it seems formal. And
right.
I really like how taking pictures is such a great piece of data, or pieces of data, because we have a lot of communities and districts who might try a similar literacy engagement experience for their community, but don't really know how to look at the data and to see what is really working for the community and what might need some tweaking, or what might need just a different approach. And I think what they're stuck on sometimes is just sign-in sheets or having
right.
people there, but how a visual right. might be really powerful.
Right. Like we have one wonderful picture where we see the mother, the child has decided to put on a puppet show for the mother. The mother's sitting next to the librarian, and she's looking closely at her child. And you can see that she's not only proud, she's intent in watching what he is doing. And it's just a wonderful sign that very often we assume that parents have to engage, but they're doing a lot of other things that we don't pay attention to that are equally important.
Mm-hmm. I love that you're making that point, Dr. Newman, because I think what counts as engagement many years previously might not count as engagement today. And I
right.
also think that there are a lot of relational aspects that are part of engagement, particularly when you're talking about a facilitator. And as you mentioned, Megan, when you talked about somebody who's considered a facilitator or professional educator, building relationships is an important part of that. And I think when we think about our communities in the state of Georgia, that might actually be an advantage, because many people may know the librarian. And so when the librarian does sort of cross over into this other space, that's, you know, that's another opportunity to strengthen that relationship that they may have already started to build in some ways. Did you see any of that at all?
Well, one of the things that that librarian would do, because you know librarians are always selling the library, is they would say, do you want a library card? The library is right over here. You know, we have many libraries which are very accessible to parents, but they may not even know that they're there. And so making that connection, you know, I always call the library the gift that keeps on giving, because once you establish that connection, book deserts don't need to be, really be eliminated.
That's right. Yeah, I love that you brought that point back around, the importance of book deserts, but also making those sort of interagency connections, I think, are critical. I think so elsewhere you've talked about the importance of reaching people where they are. So can you discuss a little bit about the potential for growth or other possibilities for similar programs? And I think we're really interested in what you talked about Brooklyn, but we're really interested in what your research might mean for smaller urban areas or even rural context.
Right. Well, you know, people for some reason have really taken on this notion of the laundromat as a setting, and we're seeing it popping up all over the place across the country. People are really taking it up because, again, it's affordable.
And I'm surprised that when you looked at the data that two kids are there for 2 hours. You know, that's a lot of time.
Yeah, that's a lot of time. That's a lot of time. And if you looked at what they're doing when there isn't a literacy-related play area, you'd be frustrated, because you'd say, oh, my gosh, you know, we're wasting that child's time. A lot of time.
Right.
I mean, lots of times they're loitering, they're running, they're watching, screen time. They're doing nothing, staring in space. And that's a bad habit to get into, as you well know. So the other things that we're beginning to do is we're playing with text messaging and providing parents with easy text messages. So come to the laundromat and have a free laundry day. And getting people in at certain times where we can promote more literacy activities. And also helping them see the laundromat as a place that really will help them connect with other community activities. Like, you're in the laundry now, but you might pop over to Story Hour at the library, and send that as a text message is a very effective strategy. We're beginning to study that as another add-on to the laundromat.
How the digital literacies might also be included. And as you're sort of answering that question as it relates to parents, do you touch on that at all as it relates to children?
Well, you know, we're analyzing data as you speak, and we find that screen time is not a great time for parent-child interaction. And books are. So even though there are many wonderful things, digital assets and educational media, we still prefer the good old book and the kind of extra textual talk that goes along with books.
Absolutely. I'm just wondering if you feel like this is scalable for rural areas at all?
Oh, it's already scalable. I mean, it is. We actually went to a laundromat conference called Clean, and we had a booth, and we had laundromats all across the country come, and they're buying a little packet where they can just do this in the laundromat. We have a large study now in Chicago.
It's exciting.
So
this is the conference for laundromat owners.
Yes.
What a great idea.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
And then the other interesting thing is car dealerships have just come to us.
Oh, my gosh. I need that 1 year ago. I was in.
Really, if you think of it.
It was not fun.
I mean, if you think of it, the adult goes to the car, you know, dealership. They're interested in getting a car. The kid sits and listens for a little while, but then what do you do? Uh-huh. So we're beginning to create a literacy replay area in car dealerships. And the whole idea is, how can we get our industries, our
banks,
our small business
sounds
owners.
Sounds like tremendous potential. I keep wondering too, again, I just go back to when you talk about a culture of poverty, I also think about, again, culturally rich techs and how those, you know, really present a great opportunity too for growth, because we know a lot of communities that are in poverty also are, the book deserts also exist with regard to the mirrors and windows, and that very important metaphor that Rudin Sims Bishops put forward for kids being able to see themselves and to see other aspects of the world through literature.
Absolutely. So critically important. So this summer we're doing our fifth year of a vending machine with free books in high poverty communities and communities that are in book deserts. And all of those books are targeted to the cultural community in which they reside. So in a Chinese predominant area, we have books for children in English as well as in Chinese.
Mm-hmm. So second language learners. Awesome.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's very interesting because a lot of the parents will pick the English book over the Chinese book or the Spanish book because they want their children to learn English. But just having it there makes parents feel, I have a choice. I can choose, right?
It's affirming. Yeah, that is very affirming.
Yeah.
Well, we've learned so much in our conversation today, and it's so exciting. And I just want to thank you for taking the time to tell us about your research and really talk about how accessible this is and how it can be expanded in Georgia.
Yeah, and I am curious if you have any other advice for people in districts who are interested in doing similar programs.
Well, I encourage them to contact me, and it's kind of easy. And one of the things we're thinking of trying to do in Atlanta, in particular, or in the area of Atlanta, is to bring all of these groups together and say, what can happen in a community when it becomes a community-rich early literacy environment that supports the culture of that community and the families in that community? What can we begin to see? And I think we will see a tremendous growth, because I think these families are really critically interested in having their children achieve. And all they need is just a little help and a little opportunity in order to do that.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. Dr. Newman, you know where to find us. We are on the bandwagon for that, absolutely. And we want to thank you again for being so tremendously responsive to us and for helping us as we help communities throughout the state of Georgia to build literacy-rich communities.
Thank you so much. It's been fun.
Okay. Have a great day.
All right. Take care.